This recording is for Terry Richard, and the conference ID for this, the conference ID is PTR6184. Thank you.
Hello.
This is the AT&T operator, and I just want to advise you that we have now added the recorder. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Kurt. We're ready.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear who was on the line.
This is Cecil King with the Center for Healthcare Services in San Antonio.
Oh, great. Great. And who else is on the line?
Linda Ender with the Senior Source in Dallas.
Linda with Senior Source. Great. Who else do we have on the line?
Dennis Phillips with Access.
Great. Hi, Dennis.
Hi.
Who else do we have on the line?
This is Joe Lozano with Coastal Plains in Alice, Texas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have others? Anybody else on the line? Okay. Well, we were expecting a couple of more from the council that hopefully will call in just a few minutes. And so there's somebody. Did somebody just join the call?
Yes.
Good morning. You want to let us know who you are and who you're with?
I'm Darla Gay with the Austin Travis County Reentry Roundtable.
Austin Travis, great. And then I think I heard somebody else. Did somebody else just join the call after Darla?
Hi, this is Irene Namat with CPSH.
Hi, Irene.
Hi.
And you all are here for the conference call for the... good morning. Somebody
good morning.
Just call in?
This is Jonas.
Hi, Jonas. Morning. You're with HHSC, right?
That is correct.
We have a number of people on the call, so I'm excited. That's great. That's great. I'm Terry Richard, by the way, and I am the Housing and Health Services Coordination Council, the coordinator, support staff person here at Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs. I really appreciate everyone joining us for this call. Really do appreciate it. Okay. Who else do we have on the call?
Bonnie Currington with DSHS.
Hi, Bonnie. How are you this morning?
Good.
Good. Okay, great. Did someone just join the call?
Yes, this is Robin Leo Grand from Community for Permanent Supported Housing.
Great. Community for Permanent Supported Housing. Great. Great. Well, I'm thrilled to have this many people on the call. Thank you. Glad you could all join us. Well, I scheduled it for an hour, so I'm sure there are going to be more people joining as we get going. Paula, are you on the line? Okay. We've got Bonnie, and I don't think Jeff and Joy were going to be able to make it. So really appreciate all of you taking time out of your Friday to join us for this call. So I made the announcement about the call, but I don't think any of you have any of the materials other than those on the council. So what I could do is I just could walk through kind of what we're planning to do today for this hour. Good morning.
Hi.
Is this Paula?
Yes.
Hi, Paula. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you.
Good.
I'm just getting ready to get started. We have a number of people that have joined in addition to council members, so I'm thrilled about that. And we just kind of went through introductions, and we can... So I just wanted to let everybody know I was going to kind of walk through the agenda, but I was going to give maybe just a little bit of background or
Paula, would you, or Jonas, would either of you like to just give just a little of background about the council and then kind of how we got to where we are today, or would you prefer I do that?
I prefer you do that.
Okay. Well, I'll just jump in. Jonas?
That's fine.
Okay. Well, I'll just jump in then. The council was created by Senate Bill 1878, and that was back in 2009-10, I believe. And the purpose of the council is to increase and expand service-enriched housing across Texas. And service-enriched housing and is integrated, affordable, and accessible housing for people with disabilities, where services can be provided but are voluntarily. People volunteer to participate in those services. So the purpose of the council is to try to educate staff, work towards expanding service-enriched housing opportunities for people with disabilities across Texas. So there have been activities that have been going on over the past 3 years. The council is required to develop a biennial plan that goes to the Office of the Governor and the Legislative Budget Board every August 1st, every even-numbered year. So if any of you are not already aware, you can look at both of the previous biennial plans and other information about the council on the TDHCA's website. Is everyone familiar with the council website?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Great. So what we're in the process of doing is trying to develop the 2014-15 biennial plan. And so over this past year, there was a vendor that we worked with called the Technical Assistance Collaborative, and they produced a comprehensive analysis of service-enriched finance practices across the country. And they shared that report with us. That is now also posted on our website. They first went and looked at other states and did a case studies report that's included in their final one that's on the website. They kind of looked at other states and what other states have done to develop more service-enriched housing. And then they produced a report with recommendations. And so what the council did was look at those recommendations, and then we voted and selected the top three recommendations that the council really wanted to focus on developing implementation strategies around. And so that's sort of really, really high level, but kind of how we got to where we're going today. Any questions so far about kind of what this work, and then I'll go into more about what specifically this recommendation is. Any questions so far? One thing I forgot to mention is that we are recording this telephone call so that we can post that up on our website for individuals to listen to the audio if for some reason they were not able to attend the work group meeting. So I just wanted to make sure everybody's aware that we're being recorded, and we will post that later. And then if you all can make sure that you be careful about muting your phones, because when that happens, then a lot of times we get elevator music in the background. So please don't mute your phones or so that we don't get any interference. So what I had laid out for the agenda today, this work group is really focused on additional resources. So the specific recommendation from, and I will call the Technical Assistance Collaborative TAC from now on, is to add additional resources to support the financing of integrated, affordable housing and services to meet the needs of underserved disability groups and older adults. And so what we plan to do today, I laid out a schedule, and so the first item on the agenda was to just really talk about the work group plan. And so just a brief overview. I plan to do what I have done today, which is to allow people to call in. What I see the need to do is to try to make sure and get the agenda and materials also posted on the website, because those of you who are not on the council don't have access to that. So I will try to make sure and post those in the future so that you can have access to the material. So the first part was just to kind of go over that work plan. I plan to have about five of these calls and plan to look at, we have the full council meeting is October 9th at Brown-Heatley, and you can see all the information that's posted on the website, and it's on TDHCA's calendar. So the full council will be meeting on the 9th, and then we have two other work groups that will be meeting, and I have put that information out on the website as well. So there is a second work group that's really looking at developing service-enriched housing in mid-sized cities and rural cities, and then we have a third work group that's adopt a series of incentives. And what I'm planning to do is to look at having these calls every other month, trying to kind of look at my due date from August 1st, 2014, and working backwards. So the next one will be in November, and then we'll go to January, and the full council will be meeting again in January. Then we're looking at March, and then have the draft of the report available sometime around the end of April. So that's sort of the plan of how we are going to kind of move forward. Did anybody have any questions, comments about that process or that plan for conducting these meetings?
That sounds like a doable plan to me.
Okay.
This is Jonah.
Okay.
What time is that meeting at Brown-Heatley?
On October 9th?
Yes.
It's at 10 o'clock, Paula.
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's at 10 o'clock, and the announcement is on the website. It's at Brown-Heatley, and it's room 4530. And we usually meet from 10 to 12. Public is welcome. It's an open meeting, so we're glad to have guests. Okay. I would encourage all of you who are interested to look through the TAC report. The material that I put together for the council members was really just excerpts of that report that is related specifically to this recommendation. And so pretty much everything that was on that material that was sent to everyone, I just kind of pulled out of that report. So if we don't have, and my email is also on the website, so I know sometimes it's challenging when we have several people on the call to be able to speak up. So I encourage you to try to, you know, to do that, but if for some reason you're not able to, please feel free to email me with any suggestions, recommendations, thoughts, other resources, things that, you know, you might not have had a chance to discuss during the call. So if we don't have any other comments on that, on the plan as we move forward? Okay. Then the next item on the agenda was just to review that background information. Paula, Jonas, did you all have a chance to look at that? Do we want to kind of just go down that list? I was really open to...
Yes, I'd like to go down that list.
Okay. I kind of went through the report and or the document and then tried to kind of highlight what those recommendations were to give us a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, let's just do that. I think most of you on the call are aware that Texas did receive a grant of $12 million to be able to develop service-enriched housing through our Section 811 project rental assistance. So we partnered with our Health and Human Service partners to develop a grant application, and we were notified, I believe it was September of last year, that we will be receiving the funding. And so we're in the process of in the process of awaiting the cooperative agreement, and that will be coming from HUD. Staff currently have been participating in conference calls with other grantees. They've been doing some training and some other activities related to that, but right now we're waiting on the cooperative agreement. We understand from HUD that that should be coming soon.
I have a question. This is Robin Leo Grant. I have a question regarding that grant. Could you please review the scope of the areas of focus in terms of funding for people with disabilities on that grant?
Sure, and I'm not the subject matter expert, and Jonas, Paula, you guys may help me out, but what we did was we focused on 7 metropolitan statistical areas. So it's the major metropolitan areas. It's Austin, San Antonio, I think there's in the Valley, DFW, Houston, El Paso, those major 7, that's also on the website. And the goal was to try to offer or fund 385 units. And so originally it was looking at existing properties that are either, already developed or in the process of being developed. But most recently, that has been expanded because it's in the draft qualified allocation plan to look at also new construction. So it is project-based that will be about 385. So it will be supportive housing that will be for about 385 units across those 7 metropolitan statistical areas. And you can go out and find the qualified allocation plan on TDHCA's website, and you can see applicants who are applying for housing tax credits during the next go-around in 2014 will get additional 2 points for their score for participating in the Section 811 Project Rental Assistance. That's in the draft currently, and I emphasize that's a draft at this point.
And could you highlight exactly who has been recommended to receive those vouchers?
Well,
let me make it very clear. The 300 plus people who will be able to move into this housing. What is the criteria that is recommended to be used to identify those individuals?
The staff here, Kate Moore is the manager of that project. They will be developing a notice of funding availability that will specify all of the requirements related to that. That's in process now. We're waiting on the cooperative agreement before they're able to develop that NOFA. So it will be all spelled out in the notice of funding availability.
But weren't there specific target populations, people transitioning from nursing homes, people with mental health in mental health treatment plans, and one other target group, weren't there?
Yes, it was people aging out of foster care.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities that are needing housing that are not in those 3 categories are not eligible for this housing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do think that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify. Okay.
Okay.
Could you list those 3 populations again?
Mental health, youth aging out of foster care, and I think the 3rd one is coming out of hospital or assisted living or something like that.
Nursing homes.
Nursing homes.
And what does mental health mean?
Mental health is those individuals that has a chronic mental illness, such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or major depression.
But are they going to be, is this tied into the local mental health authority?
Right. They are going to be receiving services through your centers, yeah.
And maybe one thing I could do is perhaps at the next meeting, maybe I could ask Kate to come, or I could get an overview. And I know that actually it's on our website, who is going to be targeted. So
it
if you just go to the Housing Resource Center, you'll see Real Choice Systems Change Grant, and the entire application and everything is there on the website.
So when the NOFA is issued and people apply to either acquire existing housing units through grant funds or to build, those people will define in that application who's going to be the managing entity for those units. That was a concern I had.
Okay, and I'm not sure I can speak to that. I'm not sure what you mean by managing entity. The NOFA will go out to our existing properties, and they will respond to that NOFA if they are willing to participate in the program. And so all the requirements that they will have to meet will be in that NOFA.
Right.
But it will go out to our existing properties who have been funded through our housing tax credit program.
I guess what I was trying to get at is, you know, in the past with 811s, primarily they were construction-based. And so an applicant would apply to build and manage. So this is a different scenario now, and I'm just curious about the various applicants who are going to bring about these 385 units and how those will be managed, since it's, you know, it's not near as cut and dried as it has been in the past. You apply for 811 and you build a project, you build a complex. So I forgot to ask in one of our council meetings how the management is going to come down, because it's been, you know, fairly specific in the past how projects are managed that are funded through 811. So still involved with a couple of them that an agency I worked for built, and so that management criteria is still there, and so it just occurred to me that I'd like to know how that's going to play out in something that looks a little different, because you're acquiring existing stuff and there's multiple applicants, and yet Texas is the grant awardee overall. So
yeah, and I think I'm following you, and here's my understanding. This isn't to build new public housing,
right?
This is existing properties, so whatever management they already have in place will be managing it, but it's for them to set aside units for these target populations, for those three targeted groups of people. And so that's my understanding. So that's what the NOFA will spell out.
That sounds reasonable, although I know that, you know, the management criteria for 811 is a little more specific than perhaps a lot of projects would. I'm assuming they'll have to make some kind of an agreement that they would adhere to the HUD criteria in that regard. But didn't you just say at the beginning of this discussion that they were expanding that NOFA to consider some new construction as well?
Right. They are including that in the draft qualified allocation plan, where applicants who are applying for the housing tax credit in 2014 could get additional points. And, yes, some of that could be for new construction. So it's yet to be
Okay.
But that would mean those units would not be operational for 12 to 18 months after the tax credit award.
That's correct, which was, you know, originally the thought was to use existing properties or properties that are in the pipeline to already in the pipeline to be developed. But I think what the thinking was let's not limit it to that. There are some requirements about the time frame for those properties once they are awarded, and I'm not the expert on that. But the qualified allocation plan, we are going to have a discussion about that draft plan at the council meeting that's on October 9th.
That's good because I thought, sounds like I have a little bit of a confusion because I thought we were talking about the 811 funds being expanded to new construction, but you're talking more about the tax incentive funds.
Well, in the qualified allocation plan, you can have a choice of if you're in those seven metropolitan statistical areas, the only way to get the additional points for your application is to participate in this Section 811 PRA. It's for you to participate in that program,
okay,
which would require you to set aside specific units for those three groups of people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah. And then concurrently, there's also going to be then a NOFA that will go out to our existing properties or ones that you know, we just announced the new list of the awardees for the housing tax credits has just been updated on our website. So we'll be reaching out to those folks and to our existing properties with that NOFA in those seven metropolitan statistical areas. So those things will kind of be going both at the same time. And that's if the qualified allocation plan does have to be approved by the governor. So I just want to really reiterate that it is draft at this point. But if it does move forward and ends up in the final document, then that will also be an effort that's related.
So
we're trying to make efforts to get that Section 811 project-based rental assistance program, you know, out the door and get those units funded as soon as possible. Unfortunately, we're kind of in a hold pattern right now waiting on HUD to get that cooperative agreement. But there's a lot of work that's being done so that as soon as we get that, unless there's huge changes, you know, I know Kate and her staff are going to be ready to rock and roll once that gets going, once we get that in hand.
So, Terry, I have a clarifying question. So this work group and this part of the conversation is strictly on the funding that will come down for the operations of those units, not for the services?
Well, correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Because all of the properties that offer the service enriched housing are, you know, all work with the service entities in their area. So, like, for example, you know, the folks that are leaving nursing facilities go into one of the Department of Aging and Disability Services waiver programs, Medicaid waiver programs. So that's, you know, that's why we work, you know, really closely with DADS and HHSC, because all those folks through Money Follows the Person initiative, they go into a Medicaid waiver. So they'll be receiving their Medicaid waiver services, but then trying to access one of these units as they leave the facility. Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, I'm a little confused. So I'm looking at there's a subsidy that goes to help pay and offset pay for the rent, and then there's funding that pays for the services. And so is this going to be a merging of those two, and that the houser applies for the operations with conditions of who's going to be providing the services through another funding stream?
Okay. Yeah, the applications, the folks who will be responding to the NOFA will be properties who are going to set aside those units.
Okay.
Whatever services they already offer, you know, that's going to be separate. They're going to be, my understanding is, responding to that NOFA to agree to set aside units for those particular individuals.
And so they have to say, and this is who we're partnering with for the service side of it.
Yeah, and see, until we get the cooperative agreement from HUD, we're not really sure how, you know, what kind of requirements they're going to put on that. But, yeah, I mean.
Can I chime in on this, please? This is Cecil King, Center for Healthcare Services, San Antonio. In regards to the Section 811 properties and partnership with TDHCA, when this grant at first initially came out, we here at the center, we have partnered with San Antonio Alternative Housing Corporation, who has several Section 811 properties in their portfolio. And they are aware of this and are willing to partner with the state to for this program. So here in San Antonio, we're excited about it and ready to go. We're just pretty much waiting on the green light to go ahead. And as I understand it now, pretty much you're just waiting on their cooperative agreement from HUD to execute it, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And then the next step will be that notice of funding availability.
Right.
And these funds won't be impacted by the current budget debate because they were funds from the 2013 fiscal budget. Is that right?
Well, that's my understanding. I'm always cautious to say that they can't ever take the money back. you know, I'm just always cautious to say that. We would certainly hope they wouldn't, but, you know, I think with any federal funding, you know, there is some chance that, you know, that they might not be able to continue funding it. So sure. I don't want to guarantee, but we have heard nothing that would indicate that we are not going to be able to move forward. They have had conversations with HUD. My understanding is they're just trying to get the cooperative agreement. There were a number of states that were awarded this money, and they are making the cooperative agreements very individualized, is what I've understood. And so it's just taking some time to develop the cooperative agreements. And, of course, HUD initiates that process, and it goes to the states, and then the states, you know, may have some negotiation, you know, back and forth to get those cooperative agreements finalized by both parties. So I think that's taking longer than they expected that to take. But, you know, we have heard no indication that any of this is at risk at this point. I just never want to say, you know, it's guaranteed, because I just don't think you can ever say that about federal dollars. So I just encourage you to read the grant application that's on the Housing Resource Center, and I hope I haven't misspoke on anything. That's not my area of expertise, so I do want you to, you can see all of the information, what we put in for the populations and the specific MSAs, and all that information is on the website. So kind of back to the task at hand, that first recommendation that was made related to, you know, additional resources was to encourage TDHCA to pursue any additional Section 811 project-based rental assistance resources through future HUD Section 811 notices of funding, so that, you know, to build on the success of what hopefully, you know, will be a very successful project rental assistance from this award. So that was one of the first recommendations that the collaborative made related to this recommendation. So any thoughts about what we're going to be trying to do is to get some specific recommendations or implementation strategies. So I'd like to know your thoughts on that particular recommendation. What are thoughts about, should we pursue additional ones?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I second that. I think, you know, housing, especially in the mental health side, is very crucial to their recovery. And, you know, when an individual have good, stable housing, it makes it so much easier and so much better for the treatment providers, the doctors, the case managers who are out there in the community trying to find them and trying to serve them. So I think, you know, if we have an opportunity to go after more funding that's going to provide stable housing for people, I think we should go for it.
Okay. Thank you.
I absolutely agree. This is Robin Leo Grand. I absolutely agree. The more housing opportunities we can have in this community for people who need extra support, it is better off for the community and saves so much in emergency medical expenses for our communities that, you know, it that in itself justifies the work. So I am totally for that. And I'm
great.
I'm not on the committee, but from a community, we need it.
Great. Thank you. Really appreciate that feedback. And that's the reason we did open it up to everybody. And I know Paula and Jonas I will support me in that. We really wanted some folks outside of the council to give us input. So please don't hesitate to do that.
This is Kelly with Miracle Housing. I just have a question, and I do agree we do need more accessible an ability to obtain more housing. But I guess my question is with the Project 811, considering that there's no current project access vouchers, and with the exception of the TBRA funding, aren't we saying that the only way that we can move the participants from the nursing facilities would be through Project 811 and those actual properties? But is that compromising their ability to live where they choose to live?
Not really, because if you have just one property, then yes, because you're not giving them a whole lot of choice. In San Antonio, we have it a little bit better because we have several different Section 811 property that's owned by one entity.
Point exactly. If one of my clients chooses not to live in an apartment community, then that takes away their ability to utilize Project 811 funding assistance and the choice for them to live anywhere they desire. A lot of them don't want to live in apartment communities. They rather live in single-family homes if their income allows after being released from a nursing facility, even if it's just a one-bedroom home. And I am in San Antonio, so that's why I'm asking. So that would the Project 811 funding would state that in order for a client to use that, they would have to live in one of these communities. That would be their choice. That would really come down to being their only choice because there's no additional funding to assist them.
Right.
That's what I'm asking. Thank you.
Yeah, this is for properties that already, and it is apartment properties is my understanding, so it's not single-family homes.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is Kelly making the point that in seeking future 811 funding strategies, does it always have to come back to this same model, or could it be broadened with more choice?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a really good question and comment, and I'm documenting that, and we'll look at, I don't know exactly what the requirements were in the NOFA that came down from HUD, but that is certainly something that we could look at.
Because we're really telling them, and I don't want to sound facetious, but what we're really telling them is that the only way we can help you is if you move to one of the Project 811 communities. You don't have a choice. So we're taking away your choice to live anyplace else and still be able to receive any type of housing funding. So that concerns me.
Okay, and I think I just want to make sure, and again, Paula, Jonas, you guys jump in, but I want to make sure this is not public housing. Okay, I want to make Okay, I just want to make sure that's not what you're talking about. So all of these properties are properties that do have to follow our integrated housing rule. So I think most of you are familiar with that. So this is not public housing where everyone in a property, is a property for people with disabilities. They do have to follow the integrated housing rule, TDHCA's integrated housing rule.
But under the money that follows the person program, we tell the client that they're allowed to select where they want to live, and normally it's a project access voucher, Section 8 voucher, that allows them to live anywhere, and a lot of them choose not to live in apartment communities, but based on Project 811, we can assist them if they choose not to live in a Project 811 community. That, to me, what's going to be happening, because other than that, we don't have anywhere for them to go.
Right.
You made a very, very valid point, and I do agree with that. In terms of having to mix the apartment as well as the single family dwelling, I think as we move forward with the 2014 and 2015, I think that we should consider broadening the application to include those type of choices.
Oh, really?
That's what I'm asking. What I'm asking. Will it eventually include giving the option to live anywhere you choose?
And that will really depend a lot on the requirements that HUD releases with any future 811 NOFA. It may not allow for single family.
I agree.
So,
but I think Kelly's point is we don't want to make the obstacle at the state level.
Right.
And that's a good point.
Yeah, we don't want to make it here.
So let me.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. So can I say back what I think I'm hearing is that we do want to, it sounds, I don't think I could call it a consensus, but several of you have spoken up that we do want to apply if the opportunity comes, but if there is a way that we could make the assistance more tenant-based rather than project-based, that's what we would prefer. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah,
very much so.
Great. Okay. I think I got that.
Because it's a conflict with the regulations under the money that follows the person program, because that states you can live wherever you want and we have the ability to assist you. So I guess, I don't know, it kind of runs a really gray area there.
Sure.
So thank you. That's all I wanted to know.
This is Robin Leo Grant. It is a gray area because we're talking about a huge population, and not just the three areas that we were talking about for this $12 million. And money follows the person. If any of the regulations are changed or the stipulations are changed regarding this funding, really needs to be focused on the entire population of Texas, not just the areas that this funding is addressing.
Well, and there could be other target groups in future 811 projects too, Robin. You know, we might, whoever's the applicant entity may throw that out for discussion, who would be the target populations for this particular grant round, you know? And that could change.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is in fairness to all, we need to be looking at how any of these regulations change if we're only looking at specific populations and how that affects other populations that are just as in as just as much need.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying it affects more than just what we're looking at today.
I agree.
Okay, that's all.
Points well taken.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Other thoughts, comments on that recommendation? Okay. Well, we've got about 15 more minutes. The next thing that we looked at and that the Technical Assistance Collaborative looked at, and that's the HUD and Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing. So that specific recommendation is that the council should collaborate annually with the Texas Veterans Commission and the local VA medical centers to prepare to informally compete for additional VASH vouchers. So one of the things I just wanted to share is that during this last legislative session, the 83rd session, we are required, council is now comprised of and includes the Texas Veterans Commission and their representative. And so we will be having Jeff Williford, who will be participating and serving on the council from the Texas Veterans Commission. And so one of the things that I did was I sent a PowerPoint. I don't have permission to put that up on a website because it was also done by TAC, but it was just kind of an overview of how the HUD VASH vouchers work. And I've been trying to kind of share a little bit more information. The 2014 funds, of course, are pending Congress, and I think most of you are well aware of what's going on at that level. But for 2013, there were some additional vouchers that were given to four of the housing authorities in Texas. And my understanding of how that works is they look at, and this is they, HUD, looks at the and does like a needs assessment for the areas where we have the medical centers, and then also looks at how many vouchers they have and how many they're using. So they do an assessment, and then they make a determination of which public housing authorities to fund. So I can just share with you, if you don't know already, Fort Worth was awarded 15 more vouchers, and Dallas, the Housing Authority of the City of Dallas, was awarded 80. Harris County Housing Authority was awarded 130 vouchers, and Amarillo, 15 vouchers.
Are they specifically for disabled veterans?
My understanding is that they are veterans who are they're required to receive some services through the VA, and so this is a partnership between the housing authority and the medical center. And that's why they agree to partner with the housing authority, and the medical center agree to partner. So I don't know specifically if it's people with disabilities, but I believe it is because it's supportive housing. So
okay.
I will do some more research on that and find out. Does anybody on the call know?
Yes, under VASH, they all are required to be disabled in some form. It's not always physical, though.
Right.
Okay. So they do.
Okay. That was my understanding, but I wasn't certain about that. So one of the things I did was I looked at other medical centers in Texas where we do not have, or at least we're not awarded, additional vouchers. And so I think we could perhaps do some work to see if they have been awarded in the past, the HUD VASH vouchers. One of them is in Bonham, the Sam Rayburn Memorial Veterans Center. Harlingen has a VA healthcare center. Kerrville has a VA hospital, and Waco also has a VA medical center. So one of the things that I thought we might could look at is have they received vouchers, and what we might be able to do related to working with reaching out to those medical centers, and this is where I think Jeff will come in to maybe see if they have received those in the past, or looking at the 2014 once that announcement is made. So there might be an opportunity there to look at it.
Phone.
Thank you.
Not good.
Yeah, please don't mute your phones. Thank you.
So the only point that I just want to make sure is, as you're having these conversations with these other medical centers, is back to choice, because, you know, people have to go to medical centers, and that may not be their home community. That's just the closest medical center or where they end up. So it's not necessarily where the client necessarily wants to live, although I think the conversation should be had about what the needs are to serve those areas, but also, you know, caution us to assume that they need those units there.
That's a very good point.
Good.
Other thoughts on that recommendation?
I like it.
All right. So just make sure that we look at choice related to individuals receiving the assistance through those vouchers to make sure that they're able to use those vouchers in the setting of their choice, community of their choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just move on. We can go through. The other one recommendation was about the council and TDHCA should collaborate closely with the balance of state continuum of care and other local continuum of cares, offering incentives and possible local funding in the form of matching funds to create new service-enriched housing opportunities in future continuum of care program NOFA competitions. In rural areas of the state, TDHCA may explore offering home funding as needed as program match in an effort to spur new service-enriched housing development and potentially attract additional continuum of care program funding to Texas. I'm going to open that up. Thoughts, comments on that recommendation?
Well, I think it's really important for the state to figure out ways that they can leverage local continuum of care funding, because that's where we're getting and seeing some bonus money coming in, and this leveraging of things that you have with what other funding we can get is going to be important.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, that's really sort of an overarching, really kind of a much bigger kind of issue, really. It's right, trying to make sure that we're looking at leveraging local, state, federal. It's really kind of looking at the big picture and making sure we're not losing out on opportunities for additional funding just because we're kind of not coordinating and working together. Is that fair to say?
Well, yeah, in a way, I'm on the board for SARA, which is the San Antonio Regional Homeless Association. And so I guess, in a way, you do lose out because a lot of the continuous care funding, even under ESG, as entities that do not actually own properties or operate a shelter or things of that nature, those are that you miss out on because you don't qualify if you're simply offering services. A lot of those, the rapid rehousing, the HHSP, all of the things that we should be working in conjunction with, all of the programs that we should be working in conjunction with, we, in a way, don't even qualify because of how that particular funding package is set up, which is a really good package.
Why do you not qualify? Could you just give a little more detail about that?
Well, you wouldn't qualify if you under, let's just go with ESG, if you don't operate a shelter, if your organization does not own these for emergency shelter placement, some of the facets of the ESG program, you can't qualify for some without others, so you work in collaboration with other entities that have the services that you don't have just to be in partnership which is really what you're right. That's what we should be doing.
Okay. I think
some of that's local. Some of that's local policy being set.
I was just going to say that this is seems almost like more of a policy recommendation than the first two. We really could track, and has to do with the generation of more vouchers, you know, or units, or both. But that one, and continuum of care does kind of target the homeless population, and so and we know that many of them are people with disabilities, so it still ties into our mission, as it were. But I think it's a lot more about policy, and it's going to take more time to really get a handle on that and how to move forward to really impact it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But I do believe that the way NOFA's come out helped to set those policy directions.
Sure, absolutely.
Don't lose the opportunity to set policy direction where we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, would PACE fall into this category? Would PACE fall into this category?
Category of a continuum of care program, you mean?
Well, you're talking about different entities and leveraging monies and...
Mm-hmm. But the PACE programs, is their target population people that are both Medicaid and Medicare recipients? I'm trying to remember what I learned about that.
Their target population... This is Jonas. Their target population is people who are dual eligible, but they can just be Medicare or just Medicaid. For folks that participate in the PACE program, they're 62 and older.
Right. Yep.
And so they may very well be an individual that is participating in the Section 8 program for their housing, and then the PACE program provides all of the necessary medical and or community-based supports that the individual may need.
And they may provide some housing, because like in El Paso, they have some Alzheimer's beds.
Typically, the only residential service that they provide is for individuals who have Alzheimer's, that's correct.
This is Robin Leogrand. Our continuum of care model for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities is very permanent housing based. It is related to after 22 years old through end of life, and it is very important that model be very friendly to families and very accessible and understandable to families, because that is how families are going to adjust to letting their children live on their own. So our continuum of care model may or may not be different or similar to what other continuum of care models are, but it is not based on the assumption of homelessness section 11. It's based on continued quality of life after children reach 22. And I would love to be more involved in other continuum of care efforts. I don't know how our model fits in, but it's time that everybody's working more together.
Thank you.
And that might be, you know, a specific recommendation under this is maybe convening the continuum of cares across the state to talk about this, including
uh-huh.
Balance the state, to figure out where the leveraging opportunities are, because
right.
I think every continuum of care have different different ways that they work, but they also, you know, have mandated homeless management information systems that could be taken
right.
advantage of as well.
Okay. What might that look like, convening continuum of care?
It could be, you know, convening them around, you know, a specific question, which is, you know, how does the state better leverage local continuum of cares, and that would lead to what are challenges to do that.
Okay.
And being able to talk about that in the same room, maybe allowing continuum of cares to do peer-to-peer mentoring about how they've overcome some of those challenges. But I think
Great.
The goal for the state would be, how do we do this? How does the state work closer with the continuum of cares?
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank
and
you.
And how do we address, and what is the scope, what is the state scope of continuum of care? What is their definition of it? Are they ready to change it, or are they satisfied with what it is? And how do we make the most use of that the program as it evolves within the community? We need more information, and we need more advocacy that there is a plan, and there are people we care about that need to understand that a roadmap is available, and we're working on it.
Okay. Well, the thing is, too, Robin, in continuum of care in this context, it's sort of like a governmental process that's been put into place that allows entities to plan for how they're going to assist their homeless populations over time. You know, it's kind of been targeted toward that. And so talking about using that as a way of expanding service-enriched housing is in a particular framework. But I understand what you're saying about having a different definition of continuum of care, as probably we do too in the independent living community. But whether or not we can meld the two would be a real interesting, just because this has been more of a governmental process for the management of what happens with their funds in the long run, and are we making progress, and do we really have a handle on the situation kind of approach. And we're thinking of it more as a service delivery methodology over the lifespan of a consumer. So it is a little bit apples and oranges, but that's not to say that we couldn't have an impact one with the other, you know?
Yes, I understand. I understand. I mean, what I'm saying may not be appropriate for what...
Well, actually, I have to is appropriate, because on the continuum of care, there are special committees, and some of those committees are for severely physically and mentally disabled individuals who are also counted in the point in time count, which is what the COC is basing all of their analytical data upon.
Good information. Good. I did not know that.
So
yeah,
once
so
you do the annual homeless point in time count,
mm-hmm.
the disabled population, where you sit now, I have written to my COC by me sitting on the board to include a disability committee, because they have committees for everything from homelessness to HIV AIDS to...
Right.
So there's various special populations that are counted. When we did the point in time, we personally took in individuals who were severely physically disabled immediately off the street.
But the one common factor is that you are counting homeless populations on
yes.
a specific given night or whatever.
Yes, you're counting all homeless populations, but those homeless populations do include severely disabled individuals.
Oh, absolutely, they do.
So when they include, that's where, to me, that's where the rubber meets the road. If you're going to try to partake in the COC collaborative effort, regardless of which program, it needs to be under the disability by adding it to the COC. And that would be something you would have to do for each individual COC throughout the...
Yes. I'm going to write some letters.
Great. I always hate to
I always hate to interrupt a really good conversation, but we are past our 1 hour. I just kind of wanted to know, you know, for November, do you think we need to have longer time period, more discussion, or?
Well, I think an hour is good because people don't get overwhelmed with, you know,
okay.
I'm going to be stuck on a conference call forever.
Okay.
But I really want us to target in the next call
okay.
the concept of having the state do its own, you know, the final recommendation, I think it was, because that's going to be a really huge discussion, and it's a good discussion to have, but I think it might take the whole call just to work on it.
And which one was that? Sorry.
I think it's the fourth recommendation.
Fourth. You mean of the ones that were...
Of the TAC, yeah, that were in the... Your recommendations that you pulled together was...
To add additional resources. Is that what you're talking about?
You know what? Dadgummit, I hate that I can't glance at my screen. If I have to do it, you guys are going to have to listen to the little man talk, and you don't want to do that. But it was the one where we're going to have the state kind of do its own version of 811s or set-asides or some such thing like that. Do you remember?
Oh, you're talking about... State-based
versus property-based?
No, I think what you're talking about, Paula, is the recommendation number 3, which was to adopt a series of incentives within the qualified allocation plan, the bond, our work group recommendation number 3. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, this was in your recommendations what you sent us.
You know what I could do is maybe what I'll do is just, maybe we can have an offline, and I can email you, or you can show me which one you're referring to.
Oh, yeah, and I can't get my computer to talk right now, or I'd tell you right now, but it's frozen. But when I looked at it, I thought, wow, this is so novel, but it really would require such a lot of thought and background work with the legislature and all of that. So I think...
Okay, so is it this one, establish a state-funded rental assistance program?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what you want the next call to be about.
Yeah,
okay,
I think that's going to take a whole hour just to even get our hands around how we would begin to move in that direction, you know?
Okay, all right. I will make sure and put that down for the agenda item for next time.
I agree with that. That's awesome.
I mean, I love the idea, but I know that that's...
Mm-hmm.
That's a Herculean, especially in this state.
Right.
Well, actually, no, it's not. Because of TDHCA, that's something that can be done because you reach every facet of it anyhow. So it's
mm-hmm.
not. I think it's
I,
not.
I think it can be.
Looking at it.
I agree with you. I think it can be done. I think we just, you know, it's just going to be it'll take a lot of good thought and a solid approach that we could hopefully tempt the legislature into buying into the concept. You know, it's got to be so solid that they could see it as a win-win.
Okay.
Well, we know our side of the
win. There are other states who have state-funded rental assistance programs. If I'm not mistaken, New Hampshire has one. Massachusetts has one. And if I'm not mistaken, Ohio has one through the Housing Finance Agency who disseminates their own state rental assistance
mm-hmm.
program.
It does reference that in the recommendation that a few other states are doing it.
Okay. And we are in an era of Texas solutions.
Yes.
yeah.
Okay, well, that sounds like a really good plan. I'll plan on an hour. I will try to get more information out that will be on the website so everybody will have that information in front of them. And I really thank you all so much. I think it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry.
Hey, well, I really appreciate it. And I will talk to hopefully most of you in November.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank
have
you.
A great Have a great weekend. Enjoy
you
the
too.
Rain, those of you who are getting it. All
bye.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.